The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
Well, Ryan Gosling plays Neil Armstrong in Damien Chazelle's new film, First Man, which recounts the lead up to the first moment man set foot on the moon.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Be an Avenger.
First man to walk on the moon. That'd be something.
We've chosen a job so difficult, requiring so many technological developments. We're gonna have to start from scratch.
No withdrawal.
Only after we master these tasks do we consider trying to land on the moon.
Neil, if his flight is successful, you'll go down in history. What kind of thoughts do you have about that?
We're planning on the flight being successful.
Damn, that is a big mother.
It'll go up like a half kiloton A-bomb if it blows.
The vehicle's not safe.
We need to fail down here so we don't fail up there.
This isn't just another trip, Neil. You're not just going to work.
Do you think you're coming back?
There are risks, but we have every intention of coming back.
Somebody got a Swiss Army knife?
A Swiss Army knife? Are you kidding me?
Well, First Man opens in our cinemas in a couple of weeks' time, next month. And Stephen Bendick, you haven't seen it, I understand.
No, liftoff is tomorrow. I'm going to see it tomorrow morning.
Are you? Okay. Yeah. The reviews have been, I've seen some of the reviews coming out of Venice, mainly excellent, although as I saw, wouldn't report in, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter said, you know, this strikingly intelligent treatment of a defining moment for America and, you know, very sober, contemplative film, but not quite sure it'll translate for the audience. The critics loved it. They weren't sure whether the audience would be blown away by it.
Well, the trailer was very impressive. And I have to say, I did read elsewhere, some critics have complained. Now, they're very right-wing conservative critics in the States complained that you actually don't see Neil Armstrong planting the flag on the moon, claiming the moon for as an American colony. So, you know, it just shows you, I think Chazelle and the writers were drifting off towards something else other than just a flag-waving piece of propaganda.
Yeah.
It appears to me from the trailer that it's, you know, it's about determination, but it's also, you know, and the ingenuity of going to the moon, but it's also a story about the relationship between Mr. and Mrs. Armstrong. And what they went through, and you know, and the children, and knowing that their dad or their husband could go away and never come back.
And I guess this is part of the excitement or interest in space movies, that there's always this kind of battle between, you know, your potential life or death is confronting you, because, you know, if you do go up to space, there is quite a possibility you may not return.
Yeah, I mean, the great line summed up brilliantly in Star Trek for every opening episode, to boldly go where man has not, you know, where no man has gone before.
Yeah.
And to explore new worlds. And you're literally, it's a cliche, pushing the envelope, but you're at the absolute cusp of exploration. Of journeying off the planet. I mean, it's like, you know, if you want to go back as far as Christopher Columbus and sailing off the edge of the world. But the thing that really, really intrigues me, Orla, about movies that explore space exploration, either fictional or real, is the difference between fantasy and reality. And sometimes the fantasy can inspire the reality. Because, you know, if you think about Jules Verne and science fiction authors like that, they dreamt up these scenarios where they go to the moon, and, you know, people in real life said, well, why not? And I'm quoting Kennedy deliberately there, because in his inauguration speech, he says, some people look at the world, some people look at things and say, why? And I look at things that aren't there and say, why not? Now, I know he's quoting from George Bernard Shaw, but it's the entire idea of imagination. And authors like Jules Verne, who invent these scenarios, and then science and politicians and financiers go to make it real.
I suppose people hope that what we saw in Gravity won't necessarily become a reality. Although I remember there was quite recently, there was that story it was on the International Space Station. Didn't they talk about a certain hole coming in the side of it? And one of the astronauts said he put his thumb there and waited for someone to come along with. I mean, the paper said sticky tape. One assumes it was a bit stronger than sellotape. But the whole idea of a little hole in the space station and you're sticking your thumb in it to prevent everything falling into outer space. It's pretty bizarre.
What I find interesting is that the way space has been reimagined or re-engaged with throughout early, from the early days of cinema. I mean, there's an old movie from 1926. It's a silent film, obviously, and it's a film called Woman on the Moon. Woman in the Moon. And the reason why I mentioned this was because, in actual fact, this was the movie that invented the entire idea of the countdown.
Oh, really?
They went 10, 9, 8, all the way down to 1. And it was because of that movie, they said, let's do that. And so, moments like this inform not only our imagination, but come out into reality.
Yeah, that's amazing. I never thought of that before. Why do we do a countdown?
Exactly. I mean, why not just go liftoff?
Yeah.
But then you think it's because it's dramatic.
Yeah.
I've no idea. And then you just say, why counting down to zero? Surely you count up to 100? Or I have no idea. But it works as a piece of drama.
It sure does. I'm sure someone is going to text or email us in now tonight and inform us exactly why this still continues and NASA engaged with it. So going back to that kind of date then, it's true. Yeah. I mean, how many movies did we have dealing with the issue of space before man ever landed on the moon?
Well, there's many, many, many ones. Many.
Really?
But the standout ones, the first one is a film called Voyage to the Moon. Do you remember the movie Hugo that came out a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Ben Kingsley played this filmmaker, Georges Méliès, who's a venerated as not only the father of science fiction cinema and also special effects, but fictional film. Méliès' background was in theatre. He was a magician and he sort of extended his magic show from the stage to the screen, creating really, really elaborate and very ambitious films. And he decided to adapt Jules Verne's story. And it gives one of the most memorable images in the history of the cinema. It's where the rocket splashes onto the moon and lands in the eye of the man on the moon.
Oh, yes.
Now, and think about the logic, because when they arrive on the moon, there is no face.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's part of the charm and part of the imagination of it. But also, I think, if we go back, we can't cast our minds back. We weren't alive then. But the 1930s was big on radio series and comic strips. And you've got Flash Gordon, which then was turned into a TV series. You've got Buck Rogers in the 21st century. Completely hokum, of course, but not based on anything near reality. It was complete fiction. But there's an interesting film that emerged in 1950 called Destination Moon. And that's interesting because it addressed the practicalities, the logistics of getting to the moon, the mission, the amount of money that would be involved, how much would it cost, the practical aspects of the scientific aspects and the industrial aspects. But the funny thing was, for all its attempts to present reality and the science of it, it was pipped to the post by a movie that came out literally a couple of weeks earlier, which is itself absolute hokum. I remember watching this as a kid, and even as a kid thinking it was a little bit ropey. It's called Rocket Ship XM. Don't ask me what the XM is about. But here's the thing is that they were supposed to go to the moon and they get the calculations wrong and they end up on Mars.
Ah.
Okay. Now, as if that's not enough, they discover remnants of an ancient civilization.
Ah.
But by and large, science fiction and space exploration movies in the 50s were really just metaphors for the Red Scare, that invaders from Mars are going to arrive on the planet, that sort of stuff. But there is an interesting one in the mid-50s called Forbidden Planet. And I think it's after this movie that the great shop magazine store is named after.
Okay.
Forbidden Planet, it's a loose adaptation of Shakespeare's The Tempest. And the reason why it's important, Orla, is because it's the first space movie that isn't set anywhere near Earth. Humankind has colonized the stars. And in actual fact, as far as I remember, it was the first film that depicted traveling at the speed of light. And if you can just think of Star Wars,
How long before you can make the jump to light speed?
Take a few moments to get the coordinates from the navicomputer.
Are you kidding? The rate they're gaining?
Traveling through hyperspace ain't like dusting crops, boy. Without precise calculations, we'd fly right through a star or bounce too close to a supernova and then end your trip real quick, wouldn't we?
What's that flashing?
We're losing a deflector shield.
Both strap yourselves in. I'm gonna make the jump to light speed.
Or they make the jump to light speed. This one is the first movie that does it. And another reason why this film Forbidden Planet is important is because it's the first depiction of a robot which is more than just intelligent. It has a fully formed sentient personality. And that turns up to very, very problematic effect in Stanley Kubrick's 2001.
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
It's funny, I've seen interviews, you know, with astronauts, former astronauts, I guess.
Yes.
I don't know what you'd call them, extra astronauts, or are they always astronauts?
Veterans, space vets.
Yeah, but they do. Yeah, they often do seem to do work with movie sets and with Hollywood. And I remember somebody saying with Stanley Kubrick's 2001 that he had employed, I don't know, you know, dozens of space experts to work with him on the film to make sure that it was aspects of it were sort of as authentic as possible, which is interesting given that, you know, it's obviously a sci-fi movie.
Mm. And the thing is that, you know, if you look back at it today, like if you're looking at the Jules Verne movie, some of the special effects are a little bit hokey. Mm. But it's the ideas that are behind the effects that still hold the story up. And I remember before I got to see the movie in the cinema, my parents telling me that when they went to see it in 1968, they were saying they were building it up for me to go and see. They got to go and see this movie, Stephen. And they said, critics say that the only way that a space movie is ever going to surpass 2001 is if they're going to have to shoot it up in space to begin with. Yeah. Because just the sense of it and the scale of it and the emptiness and the sort of the slowness of it. It's a very, very slow film, but it's a brilliant one. But it's interesting because when Ron Howard went to make Apollo 13, they actually went up in these planes to just into that part of the stratosphere where you experience zero gravity. And they did film up there.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. And that helped enormously on that picture, I think.
That must be some challenge for the crew. Can you imagine being the cameraman or cinematographer trying to cope with that? The space as it is, if it was done in a studio, would be tiny enough up in the actual, gosh.
Yeah. And the funny thing was, when they were talking to the cast, Tom Hanks, Kevin Bacon and Bill Paxton, they all recalled the moment where they actually threw up. They all went through it and they all got
actually
sick.
Yeah, I think they had to do, if I remember rightly, they had to do a, what do they call them? The kind of vomit comet, I think. They had to, all the cast and crew had to experience what that felt like, which is the weightlessness business as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is that the movie itself, beyond they were going for the reality of that, as you said, the vomit comet and all that zero gravity stuff. The liftoff for the movie itself was the first movie until that point that didn't use stock footage of the rockets lifting off. Every single frame that you see in Apollo 13 of the liftoff was CGI. And it was really, really well done. The sound effects really helped enormously. But I remember that specifically because the movie was nominated, I think, for nine Oscars. But of all the awards that it won, it didn't win special effects. It lost out to Babe.
Did it?
I mean, getting a pig to talk, you know,
Yeah, this is true. This is true. In terms of cost, I'm imagining if you come along to a studio, if, you know, Damien Chazelle or whoever goes to a studio and says, I want to make a movie that's going to end up in space or is based in space, you're talking about big bucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, depending how ambitious the film is, I mean, if you look at Gravity, that came out a couple of years ago, Alfonso Cuarón's vision, his ambition for that film was so great that there were some special effects that had yet to be developed. They had to develop the special effects to meet the vision. And as they're developing the story and as they're coming up with these possibilities to make it much more complex, the special effects designers had to come in and solve this problem. And because of that, I mean, not surprising, that movie won, I think, in the region of 6 or 7 Oscars, visual effects and sound effects as well. So I think the movie itself was in excess of $120 million, the budget for that film. But then, you know, and then I think the challenge also for Cuarón when he was making the film, Orla, was how is he going to get a big movie star?
Yeah.
And the thing that he'd originally approached Angelina Jolie, who would have been one of the biggest stars at the time, and she said no. And he was in a real quandary, who is he going to get? And Sandra Bullock came in. And it's not as if Angelina Jolie was saying no. It was just the challenge, because she was going to have to do a whole lot of training and weightlessness and being spun around and all this sort of stuff. But I do remember when I came out of the movie and I just mentioned it to a friend, I said, you know, Angelina Jolie was originally cast or approached to play the role. And they said, well, look, if Angelina Jolie got lost in space, I'd happily watch her drift away. But Sandra Bullock, there's something about her. There's something you absolutely want Sandra Bullock to come home. Brilliant.
Astronaut is off structure. Dr. Stone is off structure. Dr. Stone, detach. You must detach. If you don't detach, that arm's gonna carry you too far. Listen to my voice. You need to focus. I'm losing visual of you. In a few seconds, I won't be able to track you. You need to detach. I can't see you anymore. Do it now. Lost visual, Dr. Stone.
Yeah, she's very endearing, and I guess, you know, she probably isn't the first person they think of when they're thinking of major A-star material, but she did it. Yeah, she did.
Well,
she did.
And also, I think part of it was because of the movie Speed that she made in the movie. I mean, as you said, completely endearing. And another reason why I think Gravity is really, really important is because it was the first woman.
True. Actually, and this is one of the things I was going to ask you, that, you know, space movies, what sort of audience they attract. A lot of the times, the cast are very male. I suspect, you know, those movies that have that sci-fi element to them attract more larger male audiences as well.
They do. They do. But I think that was one of the reasons why. I mean, Alfonso Cuarón is a very progressive filmmaker. I mean, if you look back at his films like Children of Men and Utu Mama Tambien, he's always looking for, you know, to go to something that's familiar and then turn it on its head. And if you look back, we were talking about Apollo 13. If you look back, there's a terrific movie from 1983, The Right Stuff, which is about the very, very early days of the space program. That is completely testosterone fueled. It's all about the pioneering men, you know, Ed Harris, Scott Glenn, Sam Shepard, Dennis Quaid. I mean, they're not Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're not Bruce Willis, but they're very, very, very masculine. Yeah. There's a very, very Americanized sense of masculinity. And one of my favorite scenes, actually, in The Right Stuff is when one of the missions run by Fred Ward. When he was returning to Earth, there was a problem with the space capsule, and he blew the hatch apparently. And all of a sudden, they got bad publicity. And then his wife, played by Veronica Cartwright, gets incredibly upset.
I can see this afternoon shaping up just great, and the rest of the day, tomorrow too. I mean, what did they want me to do in here? Cook? Oh, and then risk my life and my kids by dragging them across that highway to the worst beach in Florida. Oh, Gus, I wanted to eat in the White House. I wanted to talk to Jackie about things.
And there it shows the human aspect that she wanted. The reason why she wanted her husband to go into space and come back a hero was because she wanted to meet Jackie. She wanted to go to the White House and sit on the lawn. You know, and again, it just puts it in a different perspective, the way different people would look at the story. And that was one of the important things I found about the right stuff, is that it gave you the positions of the women within the space program where they saw their husbands going off on what effectively turned out for a number of them to be suicide missions. Mm. They were going out to test the plane and they were not coming back.
Coming back, yeah. And as you said, this is why the movie First Man, this appears from the trailer at the very least, and what the critics have been saying, this is very central to the film, that relationship between Neil Armstrong and his wife. Well, we shall see how the audiences enjoy it. Critics have loved it. It's opening in our cinemas on October 10th.
Lift off is then
is right. Stephen, lovely to talk to you, and thanks so much for joining us here this evening. Cheers. That's our film correspondent, Stephen Benedict, joining us. And Damien Chazelle's film, he of course the man behind Whiplash and then La La Land, is entitled First Man. This is The Green Room on News Talk.
News Talk 106 to 108.